TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Politics today is little more than money laundering in the trafficking of power and policy. Why New York's Zuccotti Park is occupied is no mystery. They are occupying Wall Street because Wall Street has occupied America.
That was one of the highlights of Bill Moyers' keynote address at Public Citizen's 40th anniversary celebration in October 2011. And if you have not heard the full speech, you need to go to tucradio.org's website to catch up. Bill Moyers is widely acclaimed as one of America's most respected journalists. He once worked in the Johnson administration as deputy director of the Peace Corps and special assistant and then press secretary. He also played a key role in organizing and supervising the 1964 Great Society Legislative Task Forces. When Ralph Nader asked him to give the keynote address, Moyers agreed with enthusiasm and said that democracy would have been even more imperiled today if Public Citizen had not stayed the course. Halfway through his speech, Moyers said that he was going to cut it short when he saw it was getting later than planned. And when I went to the website of truthout.org, where the full speech was posted, I realized that folks at the celebration had every reason to be disappointed. What Moyers left out was a concise and revealing mini-history of the corporate takeover of America's democracy, beginning with the infamous secret 1971 memo by Lewis Powell, soon to become Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Since it was fruitless to find a male voice who could come even close to Bill Moyers' beautiful rhetorical style, and since much of this part of Moyers' speech are quotes from his in-depth historic research, I decided to read for you the unrecorded portion of Moyers' keynote address, beginning with a very surprising quote, given the source, set up by Moyers. Americans have learned the hard way that when rich organizations and wealthy individuals shower Washington with millions in campaign contributions, they get what they want. They know that if you don't contribute to their campaigns or spend generously on lobbying, quote, you pick up a disproportionate share of America's tax bill. You pay higher prices for a broad range of products, from peanuts to prescriptions. You pay taxes that others in a similar situation have been excused from paying. You're compelled to abide by laws while others are granted immunity from them. You must pay debts that you incur while others do not. You're barred from writing off on your tax returns some of the money spent on necessities while others deduct the cost of their entertainment. You must run your business by one set of rules while the government creates another set for your competitors. In contrast, the fortunate few who contribute to the right politicians and hire the right lobbyists enjoy all the benefits of their special status. Make a bad business deal, the government bears them out. If they want more time to pay their debts, the government gives them an extension. If they want immunity from certain laws, the government gives it. If they want to ignore rules their competition must comply with, the government gives it approval. If they want to kill legislation that is intended for the public, it gets killed. End quote. Bill Moyers writes, I didn't crib that litany from Public Citizens' muckraking investigations over the years, although I could have. Nor did I lift it from Das Kapital by Karl Marx. No, I was literally quoting Time magazine, long a tribune of America's establishment media. From the bosom of mainstream media comes the bald, spare, and damning conclusion. We now have government for the few at the expense of the many. But let me call another witness from the pro-business and capitalist-friendly press. In the middle of the last decade, 4 years before the great collapse of 2008, the editors of The Economist warned, quote, "A growing body of evidence suggests that the meritocratic ideal is in trouble in America. Income inequality is growing to levels not seen since the first Gilded Age. But social mobility is not increasing at anything like the same pace. Everywhere you look in modern America, in the Hollywood Hills or the canyons off Wall Street, in the Nashville recording studios or the clapboard houses of Cambridge, Mass., you see elites mastering the art of perpetuating themselves. America is increasingly looking like Imperial Britain, with dynastic ties proliferating, social circles interlocking, mechanisms of social exclusion strengthening, and a gap widening between the people who make decisions and shape the culture and the vast majority of working stiffs." End quote. Here the editors of The Economist: "The United States is on its way to becoming a European-style class-based society." Bill Moyers goes on, "Can you imagine what would happen if I had said that on PBS? Mitch McConnell and John Boehner would put Elmo and Big Bird under house arrest. Come to think of it, I did say it on PBS back when Karl Rove was president, and there was indeed hell to pay. You would have thought Che Guevara had run his motorcycle across the White House lawn. But I wasn't quoting from a radical or even liberal manifesto. I was quoting, to repeat, one of the business world's most respected journals. And that was well before our financiers, drunk with greed and high on the illusions and conceits of laissez-faire fundamentalism and humored by rented politicians who do their bidding, brought America to the edge of the abyss and our middle class to its knees. How could it be? How could this happen in the country whose framers spoke of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the same breath as political equality? Democracy wasn't meant to produce a class-ridden society." The historian Gordon Wood won the Pulitzer Prize for his book on The Radicalism of the American Revolution. If you haven't read it, now's the time. Wood says that our nation discovered its greatness by, quote, "creating a prosperous free society belonging to obscure people with their workaday concerns and their pecuniary pursuits of happiness. This democracy," he said, "changed the lives of hitherto neglected and despised masses of common laboring people." End quote. You are listening to a reading from the unrecorded portion of Bill Moyers' keynote speech at Public Citizen's 40th anniversary celebration in October 2011. Bill Moyers now is remembering his parents. He wrote, "Henry and Ruby Moyers were common laboring people. My father dropped out of the fourth grade and never returned to school because his family needed him to pick cotton to make ends meet. Mother managed to finish the eighth grade before she followed him into the fields. They were tenant farmers when the Great Depression knocked them down and almost out. The year I was born, my father was making $2 a day working on the highway to Oklahoma City. He never took home more than $100 a week in his working life, and made that only when he joined the union in the last job he held. I was one of the poorest white kids in town, but in many respects I was the equal of my friend, who was the daughter of the richest man in town. I went to good public schools, had use of a good public library, played sandlot baseball in a good public park, and traveled far on good public roads with good public facilities to a good public university. Because these public goods were there for us, I never thought of myself as poor. When I began to piece the story together years later, I came to realize that people like the Moyers had been included in the American deal. We, the people, included us. It's heartbreaking to see what has become of that bargain. These days, it's every man for himself. May the richest and most ruthless predator win. How did this happen? You know the story, because it begins the very same year that you began your public advocacy with Public Citizen and I began my public journalism. 1971 was a seminal year. On March 29 of that year, Ralph Nader bought ads in 13 publications and sent out letters asking people if they would invest their talents, skills, and yes, their lives in working for the public interest. The seed sprouted swiftly that spring. By the end of May, over 60,000 Americans responded, and Public Citizen was born. But something else was also happening. 5 months later, on August 23, 1971, a corporate lawyer named Lewis Powell, a board member of the death-dealing tobacco giant Philip Morris, and a future justice of the United States Supreme Court, sent a confidential memorandum to his friends at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We look back on it now as a call to arms for class war waged from the top down. Let's recall the context. Big business was being forced to clean up its act. It was bad enough to corporate interests that Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal had sustained its momentum through Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, John Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson. Suddenly, this young lawyer named Ralph Nader arrived on the scene. Young activists flocked to work with him on health, environmental, and economic concerns. Congress was moved to act. Even Republicans signed on. In 1970, President Richard Nixon put his signature on the National Environmental Policy Act and named a White House counsel to promote environmental quality. A few months later, millions of Americans turned out for Earth Day. Nixon then agreed to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. Congress acted swiftly to pass tough new amendments to the Clean Air Act, and the EPA announced the first air pollution standards. There were new regulations directed at lead paint and pesticides. Corporations were no longer getting away with murder. And Lewis Powell was shocked, at what he called an attack on the American free enterprise system. Not just from a few extremists on the left, he said, but also from, quote, perfectly respectable elements of society, including the media, politicians, and leading intellectuals. Fight back and fight back hard, he urged his compatriots. Build a movement. Set speakers loose across the country. Take on prominent institutions of public opinion, especially the universities, the media, and the courts. Keep television programs under, quote, constant surveillance. And above all, recognize that political power must be, quote, cultivated, and that when necessary, it must be used aggressively and with determination and without embarrassment, end quote. Powell imagined the U.S. Chamber of Commerce as a council of war. Since business executives had little stomach for hard-nosed contests with their critics and little skill in effective intellectual and philosophical debate, they should create new think tanks, legal foundations, and front groups of every stripe. It would take years, but these groups could, he said, be aligned into a united front that would only come about through careful long-range planning and implementation, in consistency of action over an indefinite period of years, in the scale of financing available only through joint effort, and in the political power available only through united action and united organization," end quote, by Lewis Powell. You have to admit, it was a brilliant strategy. Although Powell may not have seen it at the time, he was pointing America toward plutocracy, where political power is derived from the wealthy and controlled by the wealthy to protect their wealth. As the only countervailing power to private greed and power, democracy could no longer be tolerated. While NATO's recruitment of citizens to champion democracy was open for all to see, dependent, in fact, on public participation, Powell's memo was for certain eyes only, those with a means and will to answer his call to arms. The public wouldn't learn of the memo until after Nixon appointed Powell to the Supreme Court, and the enterprising reporter Jack Anderson obtained a copy, writing that it may have been the reason for Powell's appointment. By then, his document had circulated widely in corporate suites. Within 2 years, the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce formed a task force of 40 business executives from U.S. Steel, General Electric, General Motors, Phillips Petroleum, 3M, Amway, and ABC and CBS, two media companies we should note. Their assignment was to coordinate the crusade, put Powell's recommendations into effect, and push the corporate agenda. Powell had set in motion a revolt of the rich. As the historian Kim Phillips Fine subsequently wrote, many who read the memo cited it afterwards as inspiration for their political choices. Those choices came soon. The National Association of Manufacturers announced it was moving its main offices from New York to Washington. In 1971, only 175 firms had registered lobbyists in the Capitol. By 1982, nearly 2,500 did. Corporate PACs increased from under 300 in 1976 to over 1,200 by the middle of the 1980s. From Powell's impetus came the Business Roundtable, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, the Manhattan Institute, Citizens for a Sound Economy, precursor to what we now know as Americans for Prosperity, and other organizations united in pushing back against political equality and shared prosperity. They triggered an economic transformation that would in time touch every aspect of our lives. Powell's memo was delivered to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce at its headquarters across from the White House on land that was formerly the home of Daniel Webster. That couldn't have been more appropriate. History was coming full circle at 1615 H Street. Webster is remembered largely as the most eloquent orator in America during his years as senator from Massachusetts and Secretary of State under three presidents in the years leading up to the Civil War. He was also the leading spokesman for banking and industry nabobs who funded his extravagant tastes in wine, boats, and mistresses. Some of them came to his relief when he couldn't cover his debts wholly from bribes or the sale of diplomatic posts for personal gain. Webster apparently regarded the merchants and bankers of Boston's State Street Corporation, one of the country's first financial holding companies, very much as George W. Bush regarded the high rollers he called my base. The great orator even sent a famous letter to financiers requesting retainers from them, that he might better serve them. The historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr. wondered how the American people could follow Webster through hell or high water when he would not lead unless someone made up a purse for him. End quote. No wonder the U.S. Chamber of Commerce feels right at home with the landmark designation of its headquarters. 1615 H Street now masterminds the laundering of multi-millions of dollars raised from captains of industry and private wealth to finance secretly the political mercenaries who fight the class war in their behalf. Even as the chamber was doubling its membership and tripling its budget in response to Lewis Powell's manifesto, the coalition got another powerful jolt of adrenaline from the wealthy right-winger who had served as Nixon's Secretary of the Treasury, William Simon. His polemic, entitled A Time for Truth, argued that funds generated by business must rush by multi-millions into conservative causes to uproot the institutions and the heretical strategy of the New Deal. Those are his words. He called on men of action in the capitalist world to mount a, quote, veritable crusade against progressive America. Business Week magazine somberly explained that it will be a bitter pill for many Americans to swallow the idea of doing with less so that big business can have more. I'm not making this up. And the I here I want to interject into this reading, the I is Bill Moyers. I'm reading from the unrecorded portion of his keynote address to Nader's Public Citizen. And back to Bill Moyers. And so it came to pass, despite your heroic efforts and those of other kindred citizens, came to pass because those men of action in the capitalist world were not content with their wealth just to buy more homes, more cars, more planes, more vacations, and more gizmos than anyone else. They were determined to buy more democracy than anyone else. And they succeeded beyond their own expectations. After their 40-year veritable crusade against our institutions, laws, and regulations, against the ideas, norms, and beliefs that helped to create America's iconic middle class, the Gilded Age is back with a vengeance. You know these things, of course, because you've been up against that veritable crusade all these years. But if you want to see the story pulled together in one compelling narrative, read this, perhaps the best book on politics of the last 2 years. Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. Two accomplished political scientists wrote it, Jacob Hacker and Paul Pearson, the Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson of political science, who wanted to know how America had turned into a society starkly divided into winners and losers. Jacob Hacker and Paul Pearson wanted to find out how our economy stopped working to provide prosperity and security for the broad middle class. They wanted to know who'd done it. They found the culprit. It's the politics, stupid. Tracing the clues back to that unseen revolution of the 1970s, the revolt triggered by Lewis Powell, fired up by William Simon, then fueled by rich corporations and wealthy individuals, they found that step by step and debate by debate, America's public officials have rewritten the rules of American politics and the American economy in ways that have benefited the few at the expense of the many. End quote. There you have it. They bought off the gatekeepers, got inside, and gamed the system. And when the fix was in, they let loose the animal spirits, turning our economy into a feast for predators. And they won. As the rich and powerful got richer and more powerful, they not only bought the government, they saddled Americans with greater debt, tore new holes into the safety net, and imposed broad financial risks on workers, investors, and taxpayers. Until, write Hacker and Pearson, the United States is looking more and more like the capitalist oligarchies of Brazil, Mexico, and Russia, where most of the wealth is concentrated at the top, while the bottom grows larger and larger, with everyone in between just barely getting by. This was a reading from the text of the speech the acclaimed journalist and broadcaster Bill Moyers had written for the 40th anniversary celebration of Ralph Nader's Public Citizen. There were so many to be honored and so many events to be celebrated that time was running short, and Moyers decided to cut his speech in half. However, I felt that the portions he left out, or a crucial part of the history of the attack on democracy that has led us to the overwhelming power of banks and corporations today. The reading you just heard is based on the text that Truthout published on their website. All the names, titles, and other sources are in that text for those who want to follow some of the amazing leads in this speech. That includes Bill Moyers' thanks to Charlie Cray for his succinct analysis of the Lewis Powell memo that he published in August 2011. Charlie Cray is a research specialist with Greenpeace US and the co-author of The People's Business, Controlling Corporations and Restoring Democracy. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order a CD of Bill Moyers, Politics Today is Money Laundering, by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.